Now, my friends on TalkSport and Trot Radio, here's the thing. We've all heard of the North Pole or the South Pole. It may surprise you to learn, it certainly did me, the planet Earth has eight other poles, known as the continental poles of inaccessibility, and they include Point Nemo, the farthest place from all land on planet Earth. I think it's at the very least 2,677 kilometres from a landmass. And one man has visited there relatively recently, and he's also been to five other of those poles of inaccessibility. This time around, he went there with his son, Mika. He joins us now. His name is Chris Brown, top explorer and, of course, entrepreneur, who joins us now, I believe, from Tahiti. Good morning, Chris. How the devil are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you?
Very well indeed. In awe of what you've achieved, and certainly in awe of the fact that not only did you visit Point Nemo, but you and your son actually swam there. What were the weather conditions like? What were the waves like?
Yeah, so that was one of the main things. I wanted to get into the, first of all, record that we'd been to Point Nemo, but also to get into the water just for a bit of a swim, to maybe be the first person who's ever swum at Point Nemo. So we had to set off in some really rough conditions because it was a tight weather window that we could see at Point Nemo, and we had to get there on the 20th. Otherwise, there was going to be a hurricane coming through just after that. So when we arrived, the hurricane was starting to build up to the west of us, and already the waves were up to about 2.5 metres. So it was fairly difficult swimming.
And I understand from reading some reports about what you've achieved during your son that there's a local resident seemed to take against you being there, an albatross.
Yes. At Point Nemo, the scientists think that it's an area of low biodiversity because there's three big currents all come together in southern Gyre, G-Y-R-E, and that it wasn't thought there's many fish or anything there. But as soon as we got in the water, there was about 20 to 30 birds kind of converged on the area, which suggests that they would eat fish or something. But I'll leave that to the marine biologists. But one of them, yeah, an albatross, took umbrage as being in his or her territory and came down and actually attacked us in the water.
And these aren't small birds, are they, albatrosses, by definition?
No, they're not. The wingspan is about 3.5 metres. They only weigh 12 kilos only. But when it's sitting there in the water and your head is the only thing above the water, it's much bigger than you. And it did one of these. You know when geese take off from a lake, you see them kind of run along the water? Mm. And it did this at us with its beak open, full of intent. And that beak is 15 centimetres long. It's serrated and hooked.
Wow. Proof that they are, of course, as we know, descendants of dinosaurs. Now, you mentioned about swimming there. I did as well. I've seen photographs of you and your son Mika swimming there. I'm pretty sure that nobody else has done this. And certainly we have no recorded evidence that anybody else has done it because people have very little reason to go through this point of inaccessibility. Can you tell us roughly where it is in the ocean? I don't mean latitude and longitude. I mean, where's it betwixt and between in the Atlantic?
Well, we went to it. So we set off from Chile, Puerto Montt in Chile, and went to Point Nemo on our way through to French Polynesia. You could also go through to New Zealand, so halfway between sort of Chile and New Zealand. You were right, it's about 2,700 kilometres from land in any direction. You've got Easter Island and Pitcairn in the north, or Meher Island, which is just off Antarctica in the south. And if you work it out, the area, you remember from school, pi r squared, that's about 22 million square kilometres of ocean with no islands in it.
My goodness. And am I right in saying there are points at Point Nemo where the nearest human beings to you might be in the space station above your head?
Oh, yeah, because the space station passes over. It's only about 400 kilometres up, whereas the nearest land is 2,700.
And when you've achieved that, you've got, by my reckoning, two more points of inaccessibility. One of the, I'm not sure if you've done the northern point of inaccessibility, different to the North Pole. That really is going to be a challenge because that's in the ocean, isn't it? Or somewhere in the sea up there.
That's right. So technically the northern one is an oceanic pole of inaccessibility because it's furthest point from land. But of course, for most of the winter, it's frozen. The difficulty I have with that one, apart from the temperatures and the logistics of getting to it, is currently Russia claims the airspace over there. So you getting there and using helicopters and things isn't really on at present. And the other remaining one is Eurasia, because Europe and Asia is one landmass. And the points there in the northwest of China. So that the difficulty there is for us getting permissions to go into that area. It's one of these politically sensitive areas.
understandably, then, they're still on the list to be done. Do you have the hope or the expectation that you're going to achieve those one day, Chris? Because what you've achieved already is absolutely remarkable.
Thank you. Yes, of course. That's my target. I hope to become the first person to visit all of these poles.
And what is it that's driven you to this? How did you first even hear about these poles of inaccessibility?
Ah, interesting question. So back in 2016, I went to the regular South Pole with Buzz Aldrin, the astronaut, when he went out there to become the oldest person to visit South Pole. And as we were landing, the pilot said there's actually five South Poles. There's the American base, which they call the South Pole. There's a ceremonial South Pole where everybody takes their pictures with all the flags and everything. There's the South Pole about which the planet rotates, the geomagnetic South Pole for your compasses and everything, and then this fifth one, the pole of inaccessibility, which I'd never heard of. And they, they explain it's the point furthest from the sea in any direction. Mm. Just thought, that's interesting. Roll on, 2 years, and I was up Everest at base camp, and I met some people who were doing the Seven Summit. And I thought, that's quite an interesting task or an interesting thing to set for yourself. That's climbing the highest mountain in each continent. And despite me being on Everest and being up some other mountains, I just thought, I don't really like mountaineering. So instead, sitting in my tent there one night, not able to sleep through altitude, I just came up with the idea of combining the two and to try and become the first person to visit all of these poles.
And what's been the toughest one so far?
They've all been tough. Let's say Africa, that's in Central African Republic. It's on the border with Congo and South Sudan. You've got anti-government rebels, you've got ISIS, you've got the Wagner Group, which we're familiar with from Ukraine now. There's just bandits, evil warlords. It's just a very nasty region. So I needed some protection there with a couple of special forces and some soldiers from the government.
My goodness.
So that was man-made danger. And then Antarctica, it took me two goes to get there. My first attempt was a failure, parts for an aircraft, and we ended up getting stuck in Antarctica for 28 days and fresh food had run out. Anyway, that was a long story. But the problem with that one is the remoteness. It's the average temperature at the southern pole of inaccessibility is -58 centigrade. And what most people don't realize is the South Pole itself is at an altitude of about 3,000 meters. That's kind of the top prisons in a ski resort. And the Pole of Inaccessibility is at 3,700. So your oxygen levels are quite low as well.
And when you're facing something like that for the second time, obviously you learn from failure, you learn from what happened with the aircraft or whatever, but there must be each one you do, there must be a greater increase in, and how would you describe it? Nervousness, fear? Do you still feel that? Or is it really the thrill of thinking, we're about to achieve this, we're going to do something that no human being can say they've ever done in our history?
It's the opposite, because failure gives you knowledge. So when you go out, as you say, you change a few things around, so you're a little bit more confident. When you're doing these expeditions, I wouldn't say there's an excitement there or an anticipation, because you're immersed in the process.
Sure.
You can't afford to get scared or happy or anything. You're in the process. This is what we do. What do we need to do next? How do we get on with it? What are the risks at this point, etc. And it's only afterwards you can have a little bit of a celebration.
And how can people find out more about what you do, Chris? I mean, have you been blogging on this? Is there video diaries we can access? Are you even planning a book? You must be eventually.
This is one of the reasons that we're probably having this conversation. Everybody says, have you done a book? Have you done a movie? No, neither. I do track the points and poles of inaccessibility on inaccessibility.net. And also, I've recently started doing a bit more things about adventures on brown.co.uk. But my Instagram, Chris Brown Explores, gets updated regularly as well.
And I mentioned cavalierly, I said explorer and entrepreneur. What is it that drives you to do this, Chris, would you say? Is it possible to quantify it, to even explain it to yourself, maybe?
I ask myself, I certainly get asked by all my friends, why on earth am I doing this? I just love it. I just love it. It's not getting to the points. It's the people that you meet along the way. It's the adversity that you come up against. It's overcoming those adversities, seeing sights that just nobody's ever seen before. And I just find it fantastic.
So you're in Tahiti now. You've been to Point Nemo. You've been to five other point poles of inaccessibility. What do you do to relax? Do you go for a kind of day trip to Clacton or something really mundane, go shopping around Sainsbury's? Is that a treat for you?
Well, the most difficult thing I wanted to do when I got off the boat was actually sit by the pool bar and decide which beer to have.
What did you go for? Then, go on, give me a plug. What did you go for?
It's Hinano. It's a local beer. Oh, okay. It's quite nice. Yeah, well, not the blanche version. I did find myself on the inside of the Tahiti volcano, going into the colder there and going up a mountain. Which is known as the fire god or something like that. It's just like Jurassic Park here.
And you're the best person I can think of to actually experience that and push yourself to do that kind of thing. What's when you finish the next two eventually, and you know, hopefully it won't be that long for you, do you have other aspirations? I mean, would you like, for example, to go into space? What else would you like to achieve?
Well, definitely. I mean, space has been a big driver here, the Buzz Aldrin connection and stuff like that. I've signed up with Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic, if that ever gets me up into space. But I'd love to get there. It's just time's running out.
No, I followed your arduous journeys on inaccessibility.net. You mentioned your Instagram as well. And also, was it Brown you said as well people can follow you on? What was that one?
Yeah, brown.co.uk, yes.
And have you made notes and diaries and kept journals and that kind of thing? Because a lot of what you've said, even describing the amount of birds, the confluence of birds at Point Nemo, could be incredibly important to oceanographers or to, you know, wildlife experts of the future. Have you kept journals and notes?
I'm afraid I haven't, no. I've been doing this purely for myself.
But you know what that means, Chris? You've got to go back and do them all again then, matey, and get the notes this time, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm not going back to that African point for a while, I don't think. And I've definitely had enough of Antarctica for a bit.
And how long before you can even begin to think of planning your next, of the final two that remain? Which do you think is the most likely to be achieved first of those two? Both very complex operational and kind of organisational challenges, I'd say.
They are. They've both got unique challenges. I'm kind of hoping for a breakthrough on the China front to get some permissions and get up there. Well, there's actually two points for Eurasia, which both have an equal distance to the oceans. One's kind of in the mountains there. So that's going to be mountainistic logistics. And the other one is technically outside the borders of China, which makes it all a bit awkward. You know, it's one of these regions where different people claim it.
Right. And it might be a bit like asking a father which is his favourite child. Have you got a favourite pole of inaccessibility so far?
No, I think we'll put them all together and call it. That's my favourite, the whole bunch.
Listen, you've been a top guest, Chris, and you're an amazing individual. Seriously, give our regards to your son, Mika, the person who swam alongside you there at Point Nemo, the point of inaccessibility right there in the Atlantic, almost 2,700 kilometres from the nearest landmass on planet Earth. You are nearer, folks, human beings, in the International Space Station than you are to any landmass nearby. And that man was Chris Brown. What a bloke. What a dude. The man who's visited so far 6 of the 8 poles of inaccessibility on planet Earth, and he's got plans already, as you've heard, very intense designs on the other two. And you heard that chat right here with me, Paul Ross, on Talk Sport and Talk Radio. We'll be live till 5. Cheers, Chris.